We're at a really unserious moment in our politics.
Partisan voices are toxifying not only the way we approach issues across party lines, but also the way we view our fellow Americans.
We believe that there's another angle, thinking seriously about the pressing questions of our day and realizing that the right answers probably aren't easy ones.
I'm Rena Minetti.
I'm Isaac Willauer.
Courtesy of the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College, welcome to Another Angle.
Is abortion a political debate or a question of values? Or is that the wrong question altogether? And how do we reconcile the moral arguments for life with the necessity to get things done in the public square?
To that end, it is our pleasure to bring you a conversation with Liliana Zylstra. Lily is the president of Grove City's Pro-Life Club and has served as a pro-life canvasser for Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America and will be working this summer as a deep canvasser with Protect Life Michigan. And if you're curious about what that means, keep listening.
This was a really fun episode to record, and we hope you'll find it insightful to listen to. As always, thanks for listening.
Welcome on the podcast, Lily. So let's start off with talking a little bit about yourself. Could you just tell us how you got into the pro-life movement?
So I don't really have any kind of crazy story or anything. I just have always been bothered by abortion ever since I was a kid, ever since I was kind of aware of what it was. I just couldn't quite understand the injustice of it. But I never really saw it as something I could do anything about until high school. An opportunity came up. I was a homeschooled high school student in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I found out that there was this pro-life organization that was looking for someone who fit that description to help start a pro-life club. And so it was really not even a question. I just knew right away, like, I want to get involved. I want to do this. And so it was through that experience. I worked with a group called Protect Life Michigan and had some really great training in pro-life apologetics, and realized that this was an issue that I could do something about.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that, the pro-life apologetics side of that. I feel like, so when we look at the modern pro-life movement, particularly, although not just after the fall of Roe v. Wade, there's a gradation of arguments, right? There are really good, logically solid, philosophically sophisticated, morally compelling arguments. And then there are some that are, to put it nicely, less so. So can you just go through some of the arguments that you've found to be less compelling, less interesting, that you've heard offered up? And can you just kind of offer a breakdown of where you believe they fall short?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple of common points that I see in the pro-life movement that are not necessarily bad, but they're kind of getting away from the core reason why abortion is wrong, right? Because abortion is wrong because it violently ends the life of a human being. And so I think we need to be leading with that message. Something that I see a lot on social media is these stories of celebrities that were almost aborted and then went on to accomplish these amazing things. People like Steve Jobs, for example, he has a really great quote talking about how he's grateful that he didn't end up being aborted. And I think that's a great story. We just have to be really careful when we share those kinds of messages that we're not giving the impression that we believe abortion is wrong because it could kill a person who could do great things, right? That's actually buying into the pro-choice idea that human beings are valuable, not because of who they are, but because of what they can do. So I think I think we have to be careful about that. Another thing I'm seeing that's concerning to me is sort of a, how do I explain this? So I was at the National March for Life in January, and I noticed a bunch of signs there that read, "Make more babies."
Yeah, I was there. It was very odd.
Yeah, so I think maybe that message is seemingly harmless to some people, And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with encouraging people to have more children. I think the danger is that was when we conflate that message with the pro-life message. The pro-life message at its core is that abortion kills human beings, and that's why it's wrong. And so a lot of pro-choice people don't understand that. And if they're hearing us talking about needing to make more babies, I think that creates a lot of confusion about what the pro-life argument actually is. It's not, the problem is not that people are not having babies, it's that that baby already exists when the abortion happens, right? And so I think that that kind of messaging can really confuse things, and I think it can be unhelpful. I see this as also very connected to the IVF issue, which has been in the news recently with the Alabama Supreme Court. So they ruled basically that an embryo is considered a child for the purposes of a certain law. And this led to a ton of controversy about IVF. And, you know, what people, I think what a lot of people don't know is that although IVF, the intention is to create human life, through the process, there's actually a lot of death. And the majority of the embryos created are discarded and killed. Others sit in freezers indefinitely. And so to really have a consistent pro-life view, you know, we believe that human life begins at conception. And so maybe IVF in general isn't necessarily wrong, but the way IVF is practiced right now, there are some serious issues there. The way that a lot of Republicans came out and responded to this, I thought was very problematic. And I think it's connected to this this sort of misunderstanding of what the pro-life view is not, it's that abortion isn't wrong because it kills, but abortion is wrong because we want to have more babies. And so because they see IVF as promoting children and family, then we have to protect that. So one example would be Katie Britt in her response to Biden's State of the Union. She talked about this and about preserving IVF, didn't really explain anything, but just kind of came out saying Republicans want to keep this legal. I think as conservatives, sometimes we struggle to empathize with women facing unplanned pregnancies because maybe we can't see ourselves in that position. But it's a lot easier for many conservatives to see ourselves in the position of a couple struggling with infertility. And so it's difficult for some people to apply the pro-life logic consistently when it affects them and people like them. And I think that might be behind some of this.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
Excellent. So I want to zoom out right now since we've talked a little bit about IVF and the political consequences of that. Do you see abortion as a political issue, or do you see it as more of a religious human rights issue, or perhaps all of the above?
Yeah, great question. I think there's a common misconception that abortion is either just a political issue or it's a moral and religious issue, but it somehow can't be both. And I think that's really a false dichotomy. I think it's absolutely all of the above. I think primarily it's a human rights issue. And so it's helpful to think of abortion in the same way that we would think of other human rights issues like slavery or human trafficking. Obviously, these are all things that we need to be fighting on a political level whenever possible, but we need to address them in other ways as well. So I think now that Roe versus Wade is gone, it's a really crucial time for the pro-life movement because we have this new freedom to pass laws. But we need the sort of political side of the movement to be working alongside educational and persuasive efforts, right? Because we need to be focused on both changing laws and changing minds because those things reinforce each other and they're made more meaningful by by doing both of those things.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you think that the political side of the pro-life movement, or the legislation-making side of the pro-life movement, et cetera, and the moral activism wing of the pro-life movement, do you think they're on the same page, generally?
The political wing and the moral activism wing. That depends what you mean exactly. They're not necessarily always on the same page, no.
Yeah, and in fairness, that tension is a thing that happens with any movement that's based around both a moral ask and then the necessity for political processes to work, which segues very nicely into this next bit, because the abortion issue, obviously recently, as of the past couple of weeks, or maybe a week at this point, has been once again thrown into the national spotlight because of statements from former President Trump about his unwillingness to sign a federal abortion ban, this type of thing. He's gone after an Arizona Supreme Court ruling that is considered by many in the pro-life movement to be pretty staunchly pro-life, this kind of thing. There's this great piece at USA Today by my brother, Dace POTUS, my brother at arms. He has this quote here: "Donald Trump has a long history of flip-flopping on the issue of abortion when it suits his needs. Incremental change is the bedrock of any movement's potential to achieve something significant in this country. However, the movement cannot see ground on the ultimate end point of the issue, which is protecting life through all stages." So when you look at Trump's recent statements, and you look at similar sentiments among the political, legislative, political side of the pro-life movement, what message is that sending?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree with that quote that you just read. I think, so for context, so Trump put out this statement last week where he, among other things, he said that abortion is a state issue. He clarified later that he would not sign a federal abortion limit. And this is certainly him backing away from things he said and done in the past. He was the first president to speak at the March for Life in 2020. He's had a lot of support from the pro-life movement before, but it definitely seems like now he's trying to appeal to both sides. So one example of this would be back in September, he did an interview where he talked about being a mediator on the issue. He said he would come up with a number of weeks or months that would make people happy.
That's a really fun thing to hear from an elected official.
Right. And he even said, "I think both sides are going to like me." So it's clear to me where Trump's priorities are right now, and they're not in line with the pro-life movement at all. The other thing that's interesting is that despite saying that abortion should be left up to the states, he's come out against Arizona's recent law limiting abortion. And also during that September interview, he said he criticized DeSantis's 6-week heartbeat bill in Florida, saying that that was a terrible mistake. And he's even using what sounds to me like pro-choice talking points, maybe even an appeal to moral relativism, because he's repeating stuff like follow your heart, do what's right for you. And then he goes on to say, but we must win elections to save our country and make our country great. You know, I'd love to ask Donald Trump what he thinks it is that makes our country great.
I think he'd have an answer for you.
But I do. So, okay, your question was what's my concern, or what do I, how do I see people reacting to this?
Well, do you think that Trump's bifurcation of this issue as, yes, the abortion issue is important, but we need to win elections, do you feel like that bifurcation is helpful?
I think it's unhelpful. Yeah. It makes sense to me. I'm not surprised that he's trying to distance himself from the pro-life movement. So for context here, so since the Dobbs decision, we've seen several states, including my home state of Michigan, with direct democracy ballot initiatives. And in all of them, every state voters chose to keep or expand abortion. So I'm not surprised that Trump would want to distance himself from the pro-life movement. But I do think it's harmful. I think my fear with his statement is that pro-lifers are going to want to give up and to view abortion as a losing issue, when what we need to be doing is actually making it a winning issue. And I think that we have the ability to do that. When we look at the recent ballot initiatives, there are a lot of reasons why we lost. I think one factor is certainly that the pro-abortion side is happy to use deception. I worked in Ohio this past summer canvassing against Issue 1, and I saw yard signs suggesting that keeping Ohio's pro-life law would somehow ban miscarriage care, which is a complete lie. And so not only are they using this kind of deception about what the law would actually do, the pro-abortion side has far more money than pro-lifers do to spread their messaging. And that makes sense because abortion is a for-profit industry and the pro-life movement is not. So there are many things working against us. I think our biggest challenge and biggest opportunity right now is the battle for public opinion. So that's actually why I'm going to be spending my summer, starting in about a month, interning with what I think is one of the most effective and strategic pro-life organizations in the country. They're actually the organization that got me into the pro-life movement back in high school, Protect Life Michigan. And I really think they have the right approach in responding to Michigan's recent abortion amendment that was passed. So we will be in the Metro Detroit area focusing in on this one community, a swing district, and reaching people with this multi-layered persuasion campaign. One of the biggest aspects of that is going to be personal face-to-face conversations. And to do this, we're borrowing some tactics that have worked for some leftist and even some pro-abortion activist groups. We're also using the organization's own basically tried and true strategy that consistently changes the minds of about 30% of the public from pro-choice to pro-life.
Wow.
But, you know, there aren't necessarily a lot of organizations doing that kind of thing. And so I think these results show, you know, abortion is not a losing issue. We have to be willing to make it a winning issue. We have to be willing to do the work and actually address the abortion issue directly.
Yeah, so I want to really quickly go back to something that you had mentioned in terms of the perspective on,
specifically with Trump. I think it goes far beyond Trump in the sense of you basically are saying that Trump is trying to find a position that everyone will like him on, and that's the metric that he's using to build his abortion policy. And I agree, that's a personality and politics first approach to policy that is not appropriate or helpful. But I guess my pushback or my thought would be when it comes to ballot measures, when it comes to proposed policies in states where you have to get it through a democratic process, where people have to vote on it, is there not a level of having to look at public opinion and figure out what people are actually willing to vote on? Because there is an element of, I don't even want to call it compromise, there's an element of you have to figure out, if all the steps lead to a complete ban of abortion eventually, you have to still make the decision on where to take the first step, right? Isn't there a level at which that's just a necessary part of crafting policy?
Yeah, I do agree. And I think we have to take an incremental approach with this sometimes. And so I'm not an all or nothing person.
Yeah.
I think if you have that approach, you usually end up with nothing. But I think there's a big difference between choosing to push for a law that would not end all abortion and not be exactly what we want, but be what we can get right now, which is generally the pro-life movement's approach. There's a big difference between that and what Trump is doing, which is, I mean, who knows what he even really believes. It seems like he doesn't have any principles, and he's clearly not making the abortion issue a priority. Yeah, I don't think that's the same thing at all.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And then it gets back, and then that's going to be the question that's going to guide the movement for a really long time, is the question of what do you do electorally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I want to go back and talk a little bit more about deep canvassing and actually changing hearts and minds towards a more pro-life position. Do you think we're losing elections because the pro-life view is unpopular? And also, as a second part, how should we address this and how can our listeners go out and actually try to make change?
Okay, there's a lot of parts to your question there, but are we losing elections because the pro-life view is unpopular? I'm not sure I can answer that question directly. I'm not sure I have all the data, but certainly it would be helpful for us to make the pro-life view more popular. Not only that, but to make abortion unpopular. I think we have to be approaching this not only from that stance of trying to make the pro-life view popular, but also, you know, I think we have to consider people's emotions. I think the way that people vote is very often guided by deep emotions. I think people are fearful right now because they see these stories in the media. They see what's basically this misinformation campaign about how pro-life laws are going to, you know, take away, you know, women's access to life-saving medical care. They see that kind of thing, and they're afraid of what happens if they lose access to abortion. I think we need to make them horrified by abortion more than they're afraid of losing access to it. And so we need to be directly addressing what abortion is and why it's a human rights violation and why, you know, what makes it so horrifying. People need to confront that. I also think that we have to be willing to do the work of, again, personal conversations. So you mentioned deep canvassing. So this is basically, it's a little different from more traditional political canvassing, but it's a strategy that's been used in the past by leftist groups and some pro-abortion groups. And we're testing that out in Michigan this summer. But as far as I'm aware, no pro-life group has ever used this strategy. There's a lot that goes into it, but it is basically a very relational approach to dialogue that takes into account a lot of principles of psychology that explain why people react in certain ways to being told that they're wrong. And so as part of this strategy, you know, it's important to ask the person for some kind of numerical level of confidence in a claim. So if you're talking about abortion, you'll ask them, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how pro-life or how pro-choice are you? Because people do often have conflicting feelings, and it's important to bring that out and frame the conversation not as a debate with two sides, but as two people trying to figure out the truth together. I think one of the problems in politics right now is that we are so divided. We see things as, you know, us versus them, people that are like us, people that are not like us. And it's so hard to even entertain the idea that you could be wrong and that, you know, the pro-life side could be right. And so part of what this strategy does is it works to break down those barriers that are preventing people from really hearing the pro-life argument. There's a quote I read from someone who used this strategy, and he said that when talking with people, you know, about these issues, that justifications can be endless, spawning like heads of a hydra. If you cut away one, two more will appear to take its place. I think that that is often how people react in debates about controversial issues. If you address one argument, there's always another. And you know, it doesn't necessarily lead anywhere. So with deep canvassing, you actually ask people, what are your life experiences? What are the emotions you have around this issue? What has led you to think the way that you do? Because then you can bring out the real reasoning. You can bring out what's at the core of why they think or feel a certain way about abortion. And then you can address it. And then you can, you know, bring in the facts about why abortion is wrong, because we have the facts on our side, right? The science and the philosophy, it's very clear. But what this strategy does is it helps remove those barriers that keep people from seeing those facts.
Yeah, it almost sounds like it'll prevent people from just making emotionally charged defensive arguments when you approach them about the subject, because as I said, it is such an emotionally charged issue.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely the idea.
No, I like that you mentioned the us versus them thing, because it's like, it's, you hear this advice often in the context of relationships, but it's like, it's not you versus the other person, it's both of you versus a given problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of abortion, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it's us versus questions of what to do with unplanned pregnancies, right? These are real questions. And for a lot of people, depending on their life situation, these are really difficult and emotionally driven questions. It's interesting that you mentioned emotion, because I think a lot of there's a certain strain on the political right that really, really discounts emotion, right? When you have certain political commentators saying that facts don't care about your feelings, and Ben, I love you, man, and that's you're not wrong. But when it comes to very emotionally charged issues, you can't emotionally uncharge the issue of abortion any more than you can emotionally uncharge the issue of gun control or anything like that. It's a profoundly emotional issue, and you have to validate the emotion and not just try and rip it out of the discussion, because then it feels you're trying to rip the person out of the discussion, and then that doesn't work. This deep canvassing thing is really interesting. I'll be very interested to hear how this goes. I kind of want to wrap up by asking you, when you look at Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022, and we're looking at the future in terms of the state of the pro-life movement, the state of pro-life legislation. Do you think that the opposition is going to get worse before it gets better in 10, 15 years? It's a difficult thing to measure, but I'm curious as to your instinct on this.
Well, first of all, Isaac, I love what you said about it's not us versus each other, it's us versus the problem. I think the success of the pro-life movement hinges on our ability to persuade people. And if we really want to persuade people, we can't see them as enemies. We have to actually care about them and want them to believe true things, because all of us will be better for believing true things. Our nation will be better and their lives will be better as well. And so having conversations with people like this has to be motivated by actually caring about the person that you're talking with, even if you see an issue like abortion in a completely different way from them. As far as, you know, the opposition, will things get worse before they get better? I'm not sure I can really say. I don't know. I think it's certainly possible that they will. I mean, Roe versus Wade being overturned was incredible, but it doesn't say anything about public opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't change where our country is at with the way that we view this issue. We're still incredibly divided, and so, you know, I think it's certainly possible that things will get worse before they get better. But I do think that the pro-life movement has a winning strategy if we can do the work of persuasion and stick to the heart of the issue, which is abortion kills human beings and therefore it's wrong.
Yeah, but no, I couldn't be happier to note that people like you are in the forefront of this movement. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us.
Thanks so much, Rena and Isaac. It's been great talking with you guys.
Thanks for listening to Another Angle. Be sure to check us out on Spotify and leave us a 5-star rating, or listen to full episodes uploaded on YouTube.
For more information on the Institute for Faith and Freedom, visit us on Facebook, Instagram, or online at faithandfreedom.com.